We've got the sofa here with another sofa guest on. And the thing I've noticed about being here, standing in for Leslie the last couple of weeks, every guest that comes in will go, "Oh, there is really a sofa after all." Good afternoon, Piers.
Hello, Chrissy.
Piers Ford, who said the same thing.
I did, didn't I?
There is one. There is one. Yes, we plumped the cushions up just for you.
They are too. I can assure everyone of that.
Very nice. So you're sitting comfortably.
Yes, I am.
Then we'll begin.
Great.
You describe yourself as a writer journalist. Which came first?
Journalism came first for me. I drifted a bit after university, not quite sure what I wanted to do, and started scribbling. And actually, my first efforts were successful because I wrote quite a bit about tennis, which was and still is a great passion of mine. And so I had some cuttings, which I was able to use when I started applying for jobs, having decided that that's what I wanted to move into. So it was the journalism that came first.
Definitely. Can you remember what you were writing about then with the tennis?
Yes, I can. I can tell you exactly. Older listeners such as myself might well remember Virginia Wade, our last female
she won Wimbledon.
Champion.
Yeah.
And the year after she retired, I wrote an appreciation piece for a now long-lost tennis magazine, and was totally astonished to see that it was just published without any further communication. I thought, oh, great, it's this easy. I can just write and write and everyone will want to hear what I've got to say and it'll be wonderful. And of course, it wasn't like that at all, and it still isn't. I might say.
No, I suppose it is. It is quite difficult out there. When you wrote that very first piece, what do you do if you want to be a writer? Do you just send it off somewhere?
Yes, I mean that's what I did, and have since learnt that that isn't necessarily the best way to do it because you want to get a commission for which you're going to be paid. That's the way to do it before you put the hard work in. So it really was just pure luck with the first few pieces. But I think the most important thing is always to just start building up a portfolio of cuttings and writings and just to keep writing. And, the doors do start to open eventually. And then you're away and you get a little break and then things go quiet and then you get another little break. And, still after all this time, that's how it is for me, at least as a freelancer.
How do you feel now when you look back at that very first piece that was published?
Oh, that's a really good question. And actually, I did quite recently come across it. And of course, now I feel that it's written in a very naive way. Some of it, I'd probably still say the same things, but I would structure it completely differently and pay much more attention to the sharpness of the language. It really was. I can remember writing it on an old typewriter and, just trying to be very creative with it and use lots of metaphors and so on. And I would not be doing that today. But, the spirit of it, I think I still identify with.
So I suppose in a roundabout way, it was your love of tennis that got you into journalism.
In a way, it was. And I did still, I continued to write a bit about tennis over the years and still do when I get the chance. But, it's a very competitive area, and I do seem to choose competitive areas that I want to write about. So,
well, there's nothing wrong with that, is there? To try and stretch yourself that way.
No.
There you were. Then you've had a few things published. Mm. What happened then when you think to yourself, "Oh, I thought it was so easy." No, it's not really quite
so
easy.
Yes, it isn't. And then I started seriously applying for journalism jobs. And got absolutely nowhere until I got lucky with a business magazine, actually a fortnightly business title that happened to be about IT, which I was by some kind of curious twist in my career had ended up as a customer support officer for a software company. And this magazine was to do with the hardware that software was based on. I don't want to get too technical, because still after all these years, I'm not a technology writer. But the fact that I had these cuttings that showed that I could write, and supposedly some very tenuous technical knowledge of the subject, meant that I was, I think, a good candidate for that very first job. So I took a huge salary cut and moved over into journalism full time.
Which papers did you apply to be on?
Well, I can remember applying to The Guardian and some big trade titles. I used to, you know, in the old days when the Monday Guardian was full of media adverts, I would, you know, pick the ones that I thought, oh, I'd love to do that, and really that I had no experience to be writing for at all.
So mind you, sometimes if you don't go for it, you never know.
Well, you know, and you get lots of practice at writing, honing your letter writing skills and CV as well. Yeah.
Well, what did you ever get any interviews with any of the big papers?
I did, not with the bit, I didn't get as far as interviews with the big papers at all, but I did. I got an interview, actually I got an interview a bit later on with Sky, you know, didn't get past the first round again, but it was the tennis, I think, that got me that.
Isn't that strange?
At least got the interview.
Just, yeah, your love of tennis could lead to so many things.
Yeah.
You're on this business, you know, this IT business magazine. Where do we go from here?
Well, I was then stuck in really pigeonholed right away as an IT journalist, and worked my way up through the ranks and ended up editing a couple of IT titles in the business press, all of which was great experience. But of course, the subject didn't fill me with
passion.
You didn't
love it.
Chrissy,
you didn't love it.
I don't want to sound ungrateful. It's been very, very good for me as a subject, and still, you know, it provides me with part of my my work. So I'm not dissing it in any way at all. But I didn't want to be a computer magazine editor. Let's put it that way.
Your father was a writer as well.
Yes, he was, and still is. Yes.
Tell me about him.
Well, he wrote. He co-wrote The True History of the Elephant Man, which was a huge success in the early 80s. I think I'm right in saying it's never been out of print. And it emerged around the same time as the play and the John Hurt film.
John Hurt film.
So there was a big buzz around that, and he's written other stuff through the years. But I think, you know, that was the one that he's kind of remembered for and keeps getting asked to do things about.
Yeah. What kind of help was he to you? Did you go to him and say, oh, I don't seem to be doing what I want. What was his advice?
Well, I didn't. I was terrible at asking for advice as a child and a teenager. I think I was quite introspective, and I didn't go seeking for it. I thought I ought to be able to do it for myself. You know, and I've learnt these days much more to actually go and ask somebody, because you know, and certainly as a journalist, your job is to find things out. So it's daft to be like that. So I didn't go seeking advice from him or from anybody else, actually.
It's the benefit of getting older, though, isn't it? You realise.
You appreciate it more. And I certainly think that, you know, from him and my mother, I've inherited. That's where the word skills have been inherited from, definitely.
Mm. When did you decide to move away from magazines?
I went freelance in 1995, so I've been doing it on my own for quite a long time.
Scary.
And that's when I was able to branch out. And still, you know, you have to prove to people that you can write about other things than what you've got in your portfolio. But I did manage to, and I started to write a lot more about music and singers and more lifestyle subjects, which, you know, was kind of quite a relief, frankly, after all the bits and bytes.
Well, you could really get into a topic then.
Yes, you could. And of course, there were many more magazines back then, and you could really pitch your ideas around. It's a lot more difficult these days, because although there are websites, it's the business models are not the same. The payment is not the same. And, you know, I still love print, and I'm pleased that the kind of rumours of its death have been greatly exaggerated. And you walk into supermarkets still and see these massive racks of magazines, and I love that. But nevertheless, I know that their budgets are extremely tight, and so the freelance market for your ideas and your features is much more restricted than it was back in the 90s.
I always think you can read whatever you like on the net.
Yes.
But nothing beats the smell of a new magazine.
Love it. I absolutely love it. And the sound of the pages.
Yeah.
And that solid just being able to open it, and it feels great. And I think it's really interesting that digital editions of magazines for tablets have, they kind of recreate that experience with the sounds of the pages turning. We obviously love that kind.
That's
of.
That's true. That yeah. You are so right. Where was your inspiration from for those other pieces as well? Once you've left the magazine, and then you start getting all this other work, what did you enjoy writing about the most?
What I enjoy and still enjoy writing about most is music and the arts generally, but and specifically about female singers, which is perhaps a bit of an odd one to be so specific about, but actually that is one of my great interests. So wherever I've been able to, I've tried to sell ideas around that subject.
Did I see you describe it as torch singers?
That's right, yes, torch singers. Singers who sing about pain and loss and suffering. And I'm saying that while I'm smiling.
Sing it from the heart.
Absolutely.
Really mean
absolutely,
it.
Yes.
Did that take you travelling anywhere with the things that you've written about?
Yes, it did. Actually, I was lucky enough to, that was how I got my first trips to America, for example, as a journalist, which was fantastic. I mean, I grew up wanting to go to New York for so long, and suddenly there I was. Actually went to San Francisco before that, in the second month in the job. So it sort of set me more in mind of travelling. I'd never been a great traveller. I took a gap year, but I went to work in London at Simpsons in Piccadilly, if you please. So I didn't go off. But actually, it's probably my my partner of 24 years, Andy, has been responsible for developing my appreciation of travel, because he's a great traveller himself. And so we've seen a lot of the world together over the years. And it's one of the things we really love to do.
Good for Andy, then.
Yes, he's done that for me.
What have you been working on recently?
Well, recently, the most important project, I guess, has been with Love, which we spoke about last week on your show, which was great. And it's a book of letters between my mother and my aunt, actually, from the 1950s. So the 1950s as seen through the letters of two sisters, it really seems to have struck a chord. I don't know if it's the current desire for nostalgia, certainly with people who were around and about in the 1950s, but actually for people who are interested in social history as
well.
Yeah,
we did have a nice chat, great chat,
did, yes.
With your mum on as well.
And
I remember saying to her, who would you like to play you if it was made into a film or a TV series? And then when I was going home, I thought, I know, Keira Knightley.
Well, she'd be very flattered by that. That's not a bad choice.
In a nutshell, these were letters that were found.
Yes, we found them in the attic after my aunt died, and it was extraordinary that they'd been kept just preserved. She'd obviously gathered them together in the family home and put them upstairs. And I think possibly she did have an idea that one day they might be something else. But of course, the only way you ever find these things is unfortunately when somebody is no longer there. So it's a bit, it's a tribute to her, what might have been a thought that she had as well.
Yeah, how emotional was it for you and your mum to actually put the book together?
I think actually doing it was probably work, and it did feel like that. It was a long job, and lots of editing and lots of reading and rereading, and it became very work-like. I think the most emotional thing for me actually was my brother, who's a producer, has put together a little film using my aunt's and my mother's cine footage, so home movies, and interspersed with her speaking about what it's like to read her youthful letters, just watching these very atmospheric old films. I find, and I still find it really quite moving to watch that, and people have remarked on that too. The letters, but also these cine films, bring the material to life in a very fascinating way.
Yeah, they are lovely letters, and it just you can sort of immerse yourself in their life at the time, in the 50s, and how they were feeling because they were just growing up, and everything that was going through their mind. In some sense, just thinking what teenagers today think, even though teenagers today got mobile phones and.
Yeah.
this, that, and the other, and the internet, but then they didn't. So yeah.
So they sat in the evening and listened to the radio and wrote letters and,
exactly.
and endlessly. It's unbelievable the number of words they produced. You know, you just sort of imagine them dashing them off in between a bit of sewing and making dinner and I don't know, feeding the birds and everything else.
Can you remember the last time you wrote a letter?
I've written some, obviously, to publicise the book, actually. And it's an effort, isn't it? You have to sit down and really think about how you're structuring it, because really we just dash off emails these days. So, and certainly I don't write by hand. You know,
I don't think anybody will be able to read my writing
after
now.
10 seconds.
But you're a journalist and writer, but when you were at school, you wanted to act.
I did, yes. And that sort of came to me through school productions. And it was the time when I was certainly happiest at school. But and even better was getting the chance to take part in the West Suffolk Young People's Theatre, which is still going, I believe, and is a wonderful project that takes place every summer, bringing young people from different schools across the county to make a production. And we did A Midsummer Night's Dream. I was Oberon 1 year, and then we did the Roses of Eme about the Derbyshire plague village. And those were really the happiest, sets of 2 months in my young life. I loved it, and to get the chance to tread the boards at the Theatre Royal in Bury St Edmunds, how fantastic!
That's a lovely building.
I look back on that and think how lucky I was to do that. So those are the times I look back on, and that's by then I was certain I was going to be an actor, and I went off to study drama and English at Goldsmiths College at the University of London. And but it was interesting. I think my tutors there could perhaps sense more than I was aware of that my drive lay in words and writing rather than acting, and I was furious when they tried to persuade me off the acting module of part of the course, and fought to say, no, I want to do the acting. The head of drama said, oh, but I thought you were, I can see you writing. Of course, she was absolutely right, wasn't she? but there you go. At least I gave it a go, and I loved performing.
You could do Amdram now.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. If there is any element of performance in my work at the moment, it's probably in the training, because I do a lot of training people how to write and develop word skills, for business and journalism as well. And you have to bring the subject to life. So I think when I'm standing up in front of a room full of people, or even just trying to engage one person, there is certainly an element of performance, not pretending, but you want to make it entertaining for them, so that they feel inspired, and you want to give them confidence that they can do it. So I think that's really what people lack, rather than the skills, it's the confidence to write properly.
Things have to come alive.
Yes, absolutely.
And speak to people that way. What are you working on at the moment?
Well, a long, very, very long-term project is my next book, which has been gestating for about 20 years now. But it is time. The time has come, and now I've said it publicly, it's got to be. And that is a book about the history of the Torch singer. And I've interviewed so many singers over the years. And I've got heaps of material. I've done lots of research. And so really it's time to sit down and write that and get that published.
How do you get yourself in a frame of mind to do that?
I listen to a lot of music, and then I go, and I think the only way to do it is to produce X number of thousand words per day, and that's what I intend to do. So you say, well, I'm going to do 2,000 words today, and you set that time aside every week. And by hook or by crook, otherwise the discipline just flies out of the window. I suppose the trouble is, for most writers like me, we're all doing other things as well to earn a living. And you know what it's like as a freelance journalist. You've got so many different strands on the go, all of which have a financial value, and you are creating products that you must be paid for, otherwise you don't earn a living. So the things that you are doing perhaps with a longer term benefit, and a book itself is not a surefire earner of money by any stretch of the imagination. So it does have to fit in and around everything else.
What does Andy do then when you're writing? Keep bringing in cups of tea and coffee to keep you going.
I wish. I take that back to him as a suggestion. He sometimes brings me a glass of wine, actually. So I'll give him that. That's all right. But ideally, when you're winding down, not in the heat of writing, because I find that I get very distracted if there's a glass of wine or anything else on the table.
I can't believe it. Then it's been 20 years in gestation. It has.
And I'm a bit shamefaced about that, really, because it should have happened by now. But there's a time for things to happen. And at the moment, we're going through a golden age of women singers, spearheaded by the fabulous Adele. But there are many, many others, on the British scene. And I could name
Who's your favourite? Well, you mentioned Adele there. She's probably got another album coming out at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Be exciting.
She doesn't really need me to write or blog about her, although I will. But there are others who don't get the coverage that they should. And I would think of somebody particularly like Barb Younger, who's a regular visitor to Suffolk, who is an internationally recognised singer, great on Bob Dylan and Leonard Cohen particularly. But, she deserves to have a much higher profile. Fiona Bevan, who's just released a new album, a Suffolk singer, so I think we should be really saluting her. Lucy Ward, Gwyneth Herbert. I mean, so many names I'd really like to shout about. And that's the type of singer I would like to give some, a bit of a profile to in my book, although it's going to be a historical book that goes right back to the roots of torch singing and music hall and vaudeville and French cabaret.
Well, that sounds like a great book to get out there. You must do that.
I will do it, Chrissy. I promised you, so I won't let you down.
I'll ring you up and nag you about
do it. Do it.
I'll send Andy a tweet or something and say, hurry up and make sure he's working on it. Well, thanks for coming in today.
It's a pleasure.
And having a chat. How do you relax then? It seems as though you're writing all the time.
That would be a lie if I said that. But no, we go to the theatre a lot in London and local. Locally, and particularly actually enjoy exploring fringe theatre in London, because the West End is so expensive now.
Yes.
Although I did take my mother to see Angela Lansbury and Blythe Spirit.
What was that like? She's had some great reviews.
Yes, she is everything that the reviews said, and a walking miracle at 88. We should be so lucky to be in that good shape.
Well, when you think of a lot of those actors and you've got Angela Lansbury and who else? Judi Dench was saying how she can't read the scripts anymore.
Yeah.
But they just nail it, don't they?
They do.
On the stage.
But there is fantastic young talent. And, we went to see a play about Joe Orton, a musical about Joe Orton, believe it or not. And Gwyneth Herbert's musical, The A to Z of Mrs. P. There's some really interesting work taking place on the fringes of the West End that deserves to be seen much further afield.
Apart from waiting for this book, then, that you've been sitting on for 20 years, when are we next going to see you in print, then? What are you...
Mm. Oh, gosh. I think at the moment it's probably going to be my bread and butter work, which is good old business magazines, to pay the bills. But also my blog, crimeatorchsong.com, where you'll find my latest musings always on my beloved female singers. But of course, the book, I think the book has got to come first, so watch out for that.
You do that. Piers, thanks for coming in for a chat.
It's an absolute pleasure.
Enjoy the weekend, get the book out, and enjoy the theatre and everything that you do. It's been lovely having a chat to you today.
Great to see you.
Thank you.